Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Danny, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today's Friday, July 13th. We're back in the studio today with guests, so this is going to be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Today's Friday the 13th, right?
Oh, that's right. I was wondering why everyone keeps posting.
Really? They're posting stuff? Well, this is appropriate because we're going to talk about horror stories and things like that today.
Yeah, I feel like it's been Friday the 13th a couple times since I've started working here.
Really?
Yeah.
It's possible.
I feel like we've had the same
conversation. Doesn't it happen like twice a year or something? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe something like that.
Yeah. But, I don't know. Do you know the meaning behind this?
I don't know. No, just maybe. People die and shit.
People die and shit.
Don't go outside if it's a full moon.
Yeah, it's supposed to be bad luck or something, you know?
Mike Myers comes back on Friday the 13th usually. Or it's Jason, I don't know, one of the two.
I don't even know who they are. I do, from Friday the 13th and Halloween. I just don't know who is who.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to at least watch like four of them. Come on.
So how are you doing this morning?
I'm good.
Yeah? You're well rested?
Yeah, I went to bed pretty early last night, but we interviewed people for the apartment, and they are all a no. Well, I was like, no.
A no?
Yeah.
Why?
I just can't. People are so weird in West Hollywood. I was like, I literally looked at Frankie, I go, are we dreaming this? Is this really happening?
Really? Yeah. Did some weirdos.
Yeah, it was four people, and they're all a no.
Wow.
We're trying to figure this out by Friday.
Yeah.
Next Friday, obviously. Next Friday, today.
Yeah. Okay, well, it should work out for you. I just don't know where you're going to find someone who's decent. You know, I mean, if you're getting like 4 out of 4, you know.
One came in and was like, I don't work. I'm like, you're not getting picked.
Yeah, we don't need more birds.
Yeah, how are you going to pay rent?
Carry all that weight on your shoulders, right? That's exactly what you need.
And this other guy came in and he was like, so socially awkward, like one of, you know, those A-type personalities, and I was like, I can't do it.
Mm.
I'm too eccentric for that. I need someone a little bit on my level.
Right, but what do you care? You just live there, you know?
Yeah,
you
don't have to socialize. I don't want to be uncomfortable in my own home.
Okay, yeah, no. If it's uncomfortable, then yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, like when I'm cooking and he's just like standing there looking like a serial killer, get out of here. No.
Not going to happen, huh?
No, and he was petrified of the dog. I was like, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
Because this is the second of probably 500, so.
Yeah. So you're going to keep doing doing this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fostering dogs.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It pays the bills.
It pays the bills, but I feel good doing it.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, you just look at them and you're like, I wonder what type of life you had before me.
Yeah,
like,
that's
I love
true,
dogs.
Right? Yeah.
And the lady that owns the business was like, there's so many people that foster just for the paycheck and they don't give a shit about the animals. So imagine what they're going through when they go to those houses.
Right.
And they got someone like me where I breathe, live.
And you care about them.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever own a dog, your own dog?
I have two.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, back home.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Bruno's like my life. My parents say it's a very weird relationship because I treat him like my kid.
Right, but you're over here and the dog's over there.
I FaceTime him. I make sure Gabby puts me on FaceTime.
She FaceTimes the dog. Okay. I thought I've heard it all, but there you go.
Well, I want him to hear my voice because I wonder like if he thinks something happened to me or something.
Maybe. I don't think they think that far.
No, they do.
Yeah.
They do. On. Have you seen the videos of like dogs at graves or funerals? They know.
What do they know?
That you're gone.
Mm.
Have you seen the movie Hibachi or some shit?
No.
That's definitely not the
Hibachi.
Name. It's like Hirachi or something. And it was like this Chow Chow dog. Not Harrison Ford. Richard Gere is in it. And he was a doctor and he got the dog and he died of cancer. And every single day he would walk with Richard Gere to the train station so he could go to work. And when he got off of work, the dog was waiting for him. He did that every single day after he passed away until he passed away himself.
Right.
Dogs know.
Yeah.
It's a true story. They built a statue
of him.
Well,
they know some things, but not everything. You know, I mean, I don't think they're able to think of things that are like intangible, you know, like fiction and stuff. They can't.
Like a book, Sam? Yeah.
No, not like a book. Not like a book, but they. animals can't think of things that don't exist.
What do you mean?
Right?
Like give an example.
We can think about like unicorns and worlds,
yeah.
You know, like zombies, things like that. Okay, fiction, love of different people, sacrifice, things like
no,
that.
No, I think
you know?
Some of that though
tangible.
They can tell.
How do you know?
I could tell.
You could tell.
I can
okay.
tell.
That's a very scientific answer. I can tell.
It is. I can tell. Ask any dog lover. They know that their dog knows.
Yeah.
Real, like real emotion.
Well, I'm sure they have emotions.
Like they know when they're getting in trouble.
Right.
They know when they're being praised. They know when you're leaving.
Right. But these are basic things.
Yeah. Okay, but I mean,
so
if a zombie was walking through the streets,
can you
I
communicate
think...
to your dog, I'm moving to L.A. and I'll see you on FaceTime? Come on. All right.
No.
Then.
But
so
that's
they
not
don't
what
understand.
I'm saying.
He just knows you're gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
They
well.
Base it off like emotions. Like they're not stupid in that part, in that sense. They just obviously don't understand me when I'm like, hey, I'll FaceTime you at 8. They don't even understand me when I say treat. They just do it by like the, I think like the levels of your voice.
Right, you right, know. Yeah.
I or know, we, or you, we don't know. We don't know what the fuck they're hearing.
Exactly.
Like they really could
That's
understand us.
That's what I'm
us.
Trying to tell you.
Yeah. They could understand us. I don't know.
We can try and observe, but we'll never know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But enough about my dog.
Okay, enough about your dog.
It's the weekend.
Yeah. So I kept on watching Coco. I didn't finish it yet.
I haven't even started.
You haven't started yet?
I watched
it. Well, all I can tell you is I'm almost at the end and there's nothing to cry about in that movie.
I don't know. I'm going to have to watch it by Monday. I'll watch it by Monday and we'll talk about it.
There's nothing to cry about. Just, I mean, Toy Story 3 really left me like choked up, you know?
Yeah.
At the end, but not this one.
Well, I can't comment yet. I'll comment on Monday. So finish it by Monday.
So you're going to see it?
I'm going to watch it this
weekend.
Yeah,
I'll finish it. But the animation and the color and the richness of it all is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I was reading a little bit up on what the, how they made it and stuff. So that was very interesting. But yeah, it just like, I don't know. I can't connect to it. But you
maybe
said
that's
the
maybe that's the reason why. Maybe it's just like it's not emotional to you because you're not finding like a connecting
maybe
aspect to it.
Right.
Because I feel
right.
like in every movie you got to somehow
you got
to
care about the characters.
Yeah.
Right?
Except for horror films. I don't know how we connect to those except we want to be that one person that makes it out alive. The black person always dies first, though, so I probably wouldn't. They always do. Always
really?
First. I think Halloween, they redid. They did Freddy versus Jason, and the black people died like second or third. I'm like, okay. That was good. They made it past like the first round. But usually they're out first.
Yeah.
But they're actually remaking Nightmare on Elm Street with a black lead.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, why not?
Yeah.
What are you going to do this weekend? You got any plans?
No, Awilda's coming on. She has a funny name, I know.
Oh, yeah, your friend.
Yeah.
Wilda?
Awilda.
Awilda?
Yeah, she tells everyone's A. Marie because like, no one knows how to say her name. Her middle name's Marie, but her real name's Awilda Marie.
Yeah.
I call her Awilda because I'm
known
her.
It's a nice name, though.
Yeah. Mm. Like Wildebeest. I actually have her saved in my phone as that. But she's coming on Thursday, so I don't really want to party like at all this weekend because I just feel like I'm going to be run to the ground next week.
Right, right.
So I might just chill. I'm going to take the dog to the dog park today.
Is she cool? You're going to bring her on the show?
Who?
Your friend.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. She's got my type of personality, too. We'd be talking for an hour
really?
Straight about whatever you want.
Oh, boy. I better just bring something to read while you guys talk.
She's like, I think that's why we argue a lot, because we're like so similar.
Yeah?
Yeah, her personality. I'm just like, oh, shut up sometimes. Love you, girl. If you're
listening. No, I just know, especially when I was younger, I'd love being with my cousins and stuff. But after a couple of days together, it's like you go
you
crazy.
You can go, like, you know? Can have a break.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, after she comes for 5 days, I'll be good not seeing her for a couple of months.
Right.
See you next, see when I get to Boston, girl, whenever that is. Yeah, but, I mean, I miss her. The last time she came to L.A. was for All-Star Weekend, and I barely saw her because she was, like, going hard.
Really?
I told her, I was like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, well, this time she has to come to see you. And
that,
you know.
Yeah, she was, like, staying in a hotel and stuff with some other chick because she just knew I was not about that life. Plus,
really?
I don't really like weekends like that because it's just, like, every chick from L.A. and from not L.A. comes to L.A. to try to bag an athlete.
Yeah.
So the whole club is just, like, all girls and, like, five athletes. And I'm like, I can't do it. But she was in the mix.
Wow.
Doing her thing.
Some men get all the girls, huh?
Yeah.
And some don't get any.
Yeah, well, those girls get used and then they get never called again.
Right, of course.
I'm like, how is that goal?
But they don't care. They'll just say, oh, you know, I slept with such and such and that's it.
I know.
Big deal.
Yeah.
But anyway. All right, well, we're going to bring in our guest right now. And we're joined by a father-daughter duo. That's how they describe you guys, and that's pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. Joe and Casey Lansdale, welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Of course. And so I gathered already that, Casey, you live here in L.A.
I do. I live in Hollywood. And also, I realize I've been doing the fostering in L.A. thing all wrong. I learned a lot within this 10 minutes.
Really?
Oh, really?
Well, we do like to educate.
Wait, do you foster dogs?
Well, I'm always an animal rescuer.
Right.
And no one is sending me a check for that.
Oh,
and I'm
no.
going, wait a minute, I've been doing this all wrong because I love
exactly.
animals.
Exactly.
Wait,
yeah,
what foundation are you doing it through?
I am doing it through the I Found This Dog in a Parking Lot Foundation, and now this has become my new mission to find this dog a home. That is the foundation
oh,
I am a part
yeah.
of.
Okay, but that's great, though.
Yes.
But is. I actually go through a foundation.
You
yeah.
are wise.
Yeah.
You are wise.
It's like $70 a day for a dog that doesn't like other dogs and $50 a day for a dog that gets along with anything that walks.
Wow.
Yeah, my wife and I do that. We donate a lot of money to animal
yeah.
charities. We're all
really?
Rescue animals. I also talk to my pit bull on the phone.
Yeah. See?
You guys over here nodding when you were
okay,
saying
see,
that.
I, okay, see, you guys are all crazy.
And he talks back.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, because they just want to hear your
yeah.
voice.
He has stuff to say, too.
Yeah. yeah.
They're like, see you next week, bud.
yeah. And Joe, where do you live these days?
I live in East Texas in Nacogdoches, Texas.
Nacogdoches.
It's the old,
what
town
a cool
in
name.
Texas.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it near?
It's near the
no big cities.
Well, Louisiana border, but it's also
oh, really?
Near Houston. I guess by about 2 hours or so.
Yeah, it's like
oh,
Texas
okay.
near.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you guys talk about driving far here. Well, it's the same in Texas. Everywhere
yeah,
you
yeah.
go is some
far,
distance near.
Right,
except
right.
my town. I got like about 15 minutes. Hang. I'm anywhere I need to be.
Yeah.
So like you know everyone in your town, basically.
Well, I don't know. I know everyone, but I'm reasonably well known and know quite a bit of people.
Right.
And so is that where you were? How did you end up in a place like that? Were you born there?
I was born in Gladewater, Texas, which is a small town about an hour and a half from Nacogdoches, but mm-hmm. except for traveling and going to Europe and staying there a little bit, I've always lived in
small towns.
Yeah, Nacogdoches, Texas.
Right,
the
right.
universities there that actually I went to for a while, my brother, my mother, and he and my mother met at Stephen of Austin
right.
and then
right.
stayed.
And she got a degree and I dropped out.
Really?
I wish I dropped out.
Technically, she got 2 degrees and,
that's
then,
true.
And then you it's, dropped out.
Yeah, and she works for me now.
Yeah, very nice. Mm. Very cool.
See how that works.
Casey, yeah. do you have siblings or is it just you?
I do. I have an older brother.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And where does he live now?
He lives in Nacogdoches and he's doing comic books and screenplays. And then
really?
Yeah. He's
so you guys are all creative and everything,
yeah,
right?
For better or for
yeah.
worse.
So
I think that's the difference in the dogs. What you were saying is that the dogs don't think creatively.
Right,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
right. But I'm reading like these books about... the development of human beings and all that stuff. And they talk about the difference between us and dogs is fiction. You know, we can put fiction together where they can't, you know. And that's amazing to me. But maybe I'm not explaining it correctly.
Yeah,
but
no, I don't
have.
Think you are. But
I
it's
am.
Fine.
I am.
No, I get it. It's a creative impulse that they don't have.
Right.
I mean, I had a dog one time where the other dog was eating out of a bowl. And, of course, it was just chasing this bowl all over the floor. My other dog went over, took her nose and pushed it up against the wall and then ate.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of creative.
Right.
right.
It's not
right.
exactly producing Moby Dick.
Right.
right. yeah. yeah. Very cool. And what does your wife do? Is she a creative also?
She has done some stories and stuff, but she primarily works for me and manages the business and keeps me in line. And she used to work for Casey's music business and stuff when she was younger. Mm. So she kind of makes sure that the thing doesn't go off the
rails.
Yeah, the
mailing, the taxes, the forms, the anything that's important and needs to be documented in some way, that's the mom.
You can't live without that, right?
Oh, my God.
You need someone like that.
She keeps us from falling down. You know?
Yeah.
She's like, do this. You know, hockey pucks us back into play.
Yeah.
So what made you be the first one to be like, see ya, I'm coming to L.A.?
You know what? I don't know, because I've always traveled. It's always been in my nature to take trips and be gone. And
right.
I've lived part-time in Salem, Mass. I lived in Nashville. I lived in Europe for a while. I've lived here.
Wow, you've been all over the place.
I've been a lot of places. And so I think that it got to the point where I was flying out here so often. I was coming out here, I don't know, once a month. I thought, well, you know what? It would be easier if I just lived here.
Right.
So I think it was just, I'm tired. I'm so tired.
Yeah.
It was convenience. And
right.
then I got here, and I'd lived for a while, like I said, in Nashville. I still do my music recordings there. But I was able to come here and experience music in a new way that felt fresh, and I think that invigorated me.
Right.
It was a place where different kinds of music came. I was able to do some music and film work and learn more about scoring. And I think just the excitement and the sheer exhaustion of flying back and forth said, you know what, let's make this switch. And then I got here, and I'll tell you what, driving across West Texas, I can never go home because I'm never driving across West Texas.
Really? What happened there? What, it's like just, desert?
You get there, and it's like 890 miles to El Paso.
Oh, my God.
What have I done?
Yeah. It's like East Texas is totally different. She grew up in an environment that's massive trees and water, and people don't realize that Texas isn't all desert.
Right.
It looks like Louisiana or Arkansas. So when you drive out past a certain point, it's just desolation.
Yeah. See,
and
you're
driving along, there's no houses.
Yeah, no. See, I did the trip across country from Boston, Mass. And when we got to Texas, I was like, we're never getting out of Texas.
Right.
Literally never getting out of Texas.
It does. Good God.
It was awful. Like, if the only thing in sight was like a gas station and a Taco Bell.
Correct.
Yeah, and they're not open.
No.
They're like, well, it's 9:30. Yeah. We're closing up.
Yeah. Exactly. It's awful.
I know. That's something to think about when you drive, though. I remember I took a trip to Arizona a couple months ago, and I realized suddenly I'm in the desert and there's not going to be gas stations for a while.
Yeah.
And I didn't think about that before because I'd never driven that one. And but luckily I was okay with it.
That's why I have a Prius now.
But you got to know where there's going to be gas stations on the way.
You don't really think of that when you like have your GPS on, your music blaring, and then you pull up and you're like, damn.
Yeah, then you're looking at 800 miles.
So you go, what have I done?
Well, and I got freaked out too because when I was driving through Texas, I was just thinking of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I was like, this is this is one of the roads it happened on, I promise you. Seriously.
Oh, wow. Your association something or something else.
I watch too much movies.
Yeah, I guess
you But that was based on a true story, so.
Yeah.
But the true story was Ed Gein, which was up in, what, Wisconsin or somewhere place up there.
I have no idea.
It didn't actually take place in Texas.
Oh, it didn't?
No.
I'm so disappointed now.
In fact, none of those.
Way to go, Dad. Way to ruin her life.
I know.
None of those incidents took place in Texas. They just thought that would be funny to put that.
It seems right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like,
and there was no chainsaws involved or anything like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The Psycho, the movie Psycho, is based on the same guy. And it was much more like the movie Psycho.
Wait.
Oh, really?
Hold on. I'm so confused.
So they called the same influence.
They called him Leatherface because he would peel off the skin. Is that real?
Yes.
That is
real,
That is real.
And that's the same guy who...
Ed Gein, or I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, would wear the skins. And that's also...
As
if
one
you,
does.
Also, Buffalo Bill is based on him, too, in the... Silence of the Lambs. That's all the same.
Yeah, the Silence of the Lamb. Also,
you just ruined
with the
three movies for me.
My God.
I can do four.
Why are we talking about being skinned? My God, you know.
He just ruined three movies for me.
He did.
Wait. So the guy Psycho is not real though, or is that real?
Psycho. Well, the movie's not real, but the character that it's based on
is a real human being.
Is a real human
who
being.
Killed his mom, obviously.
No.
So all of that
no.
was fake.
Well, his mom died. And he
preserve her, though, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, he started digging up bodies is what happened. And then he ended up killing, like, maybe two people. Mm-hmm. But he took them and he started making a suit out of them. Mm-hmm. And when they finally figured out who it was, because he was, like, a really good-natured guy and all that stuff. Everybody was, oh, he's just a quirky Ed, you know.
Right.
They went in the house and there's, like, lampshades made out of flesh. And
oh, my
like
God.
Little, yeah, breasts. He was making him a
really?
Little suit. Yeah.
Oh, my God. All
Do
I can
we
think,
need to talk about this?
Well, we're getting into their horror books.
I worry
fine.
That when, if the FBI ever, like, seizes one of our laptops, I'm like, what are they going to find? Like, there's always, like, serial killer information. But it all, you know, you research and you learn about it and it all kind of lends itself to the work.
Right.
That's very cool. So you guys ended up writing a book together. It was just published in May, right?
May 29th. And we've written together before, but this is the first collection that we've had. And so it was really exciting to get to do a project together and then to put it all in one book. And, you know, you work for a long time as a writer without anything tangible.
Right.
Same thing as, you know, musician and a lot of creative fields. You work and you kind of have nothing to show for it. So
that's true.
To be able to hold the project in your hands is really a triumphant moment.
I've been writing for 45 years. I mean, I've
really?
Been, I'm a full-time writer. That's what I do.
Wow.
Screenplays and books and... You know, TV. Batman, the animated series, cartoons.
Really? You wrote some of those?
I wrote four.
Really?
Yeah. and actually wrote three, and one of them was they changed the name to Batman and Robin Adventures or something. And then I wrote one of the Superman plot lines for the animated Superman. And I, of course, I Bubba Hotep is based on my story, which was directed by Don Coscarelli, who's famous for Phantasm and TV show Masters of Horror, and Cold in July, which was a film with Don Johnson, Michael C. Hall, Sam Shepard.
Right.
And
So you've written a lot of horror stuff.
Right. And Bubba Hotep is a kind of a horror piece. It's a weird piece, and I've written a lot of horror short stories and some early on in my career horror novels. You know, and I'm kind of known for that and for crime fiction.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't think of him as a horror writer. No. I think of him as a crime writer.
Right.
There's a series that he has that's people really seem to cling to, and it's called Happen Leonard. And that, to me, has always been the association with Dad and his writing. And I think because the characters, knowing him the way I do, of course, the characters are him split. And so I always felt more connected to those characters and him as a crime writer. Because I was like, oh, that's Dad's, you know.
Right, alter ego.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and it was a TV series for about three seasons. And with James Purefoy and Michael K. Williams. It was fantastic. I wrote one of
those. So you managed to know how to sell your stuff as well, not just to write it.
I also have agents.
Right.
And I've had some bad ones and I've had some good ones. In fact, you sound just like my literary agent.
I know. Oh, my God.
Danny
all I could
Barrar.
Think was he reminds me of Danny B.
Really?
I was going to tell you the minute we left. Like, I was
thinking of him. I said, it's like Danny's come in.
Where was he from? Do you know?
Well, he was originally Israel, but
he
was a paratrooper. Then he's
so we have the same accent.
Yeah,
huh?
He's in New York now. Yeah, he's New York now.
Yeah, wow, very cool, you see.
Yeah,
people say I sound like all kinds of people.
But it's not just the accent; it's the timbre.
There's mannerisms. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, very interesting.
He's a lovely man. So
good. So that's a compliment. That's cool. And Casey, so you decided. So you grew up with a writer for a father. Did you like reading early on in your life? Was that instilled in you?
Yeah, you know, music and reading and art and just the creatives in general were always a part of my life. Both my parents were into different aspects of music. I remember my mother was more the classical and hard rocker. My dad was more the Motown and older country. So I grew up with that kind of mishmash of music. I read all the time. I mean, there was the R.L. Stine series, the Sweet Valley High twin. Like, those were the things that I read a lot when I was growing up, you know, Call of the Wild.
I remember that book.
And, I read every one I could get my hands on, you know, voracious reader. And now I listen a lot to audiobooks, and I'm obsessed with the Bosch series.
Really?
So,
is that pretty good?
I really, you know, Michael Connelly is a really nice man, and so I just thought, like, oh, I'll read something of his. And I'm so glad that I had met him before I read his stuff, because now I'm such a fan geek.
Yeah.
And I started on, I don't know, like the 12th book, and I was like, oh, my God, this is awesome. Now I got to go back, so now I'm up to, like, number 5 in the series of, like, 21. So I'm like, all right, so my next 2 years consist of reading Michael Connelly. No one else give me a book for the next 2 years.
Had you read any of them before you were on the set?
I hadn't, no. And that was kind of why, you know, I thought, well, you know, I'll kind of read this and nice guy and just be polite. And I was like, holy shit, he's so good.
That's an Amazon series, too. And I haven't seen it yet, but Casey,
yeah, and
a lot
I'm
of my
obsessed
friends
with the
love
TV
it.
Show. And they follow it pretty close. Yeah. I mean, they condense a lot. Obviously, 20-something books and TV seasons are a little different, but I really enjoy it. So, yeah, I mean, I'm finding new things that I love all the time. And when you're in the fiction world, you go to conventions, you run across people, you're always running across people who are talented and who have work to read. And, you know, between your own things that you're doing and the things that you're doing for enjoyment, and then you meet these people and you like them, you're like, oh my God, I want to read their stuff too. So it's easy to have a to be read pile.
Very nice. So you've written a lot in 30-40 years,
45 novels, 500 short stories.
Wow.
Lots of nonfiction.
Where do you get all that from?
And
I mean, I don't even have one story in me. Where do you get so many stories? And horror, because some of the horror is probably like supernatural and stuff, right?
Yeah, these stories I think you could call supernatural. A lot of mine is actually realistic horror. And
really?
Like
so
crime,
more like crime, like she
said. Yeah, but I have done both. I've done absurdist fiction. I've done all kinds of things. The reason that this book came about was that I wanted kind of a break from what I was doing. And originally, I started the original stories, and I did that so I could write a very much more traditional kind of tale.
Right.
So I wrote four stories about a character, Dana Roberts, and then Casey and I got asked to do a collaboration. And we did, and we invented a new character, or actually she did.
So actually it was there was an anthology that Christopher Golden, who's a real well-known author, was editing, and he had asked my dad to write a story, and my dad said, no, I don't like to collaborate. And so then Christopher, I had known him when I was passing through, actually, Boston, Massachusetts, because he lives in Haverhill there, and a whole horror writer contingency up in the Northeast. And he'd written me an email and said, hey, I asked your dad to write this story. He said he doesn't want to do it and he doesn't want to collaborate. Do you want to do it with him? So I wrote my dad and I said, hey, Dad, you know, would you do this story with me? And he said, no.
Really?
And I said, all right. So I said, okay, Chris.
Sounds like something my dad would
do. I know. Yeah. Because, you know, you think that's the moment. It's like,
because
no.
If your daughter's bad at it, how do you say, like, hey,
right now,
this isn't working out?
Well, I wrote about 5 pages of this story with a character that I had running through some other projects that I was working on. And I sent it to him and I said, Christopher, just wait. And so about 2 days later, Dad wrote me back and he's like, you're evil. Here's 5 more pages.
Really?
<You
know? laughs>
And then the rest of the stories in the book are our collaborations. And
right.
Because that first story didn't combine the characters, but it introduced the second character.
Right.
And then from there on, they kind of go on to be a Watson and Sherlock sort of dynamic of the supernormal.
And I will say that the stories we collaborated on are better than the ones I had done individually.
Really?
Because I tried to do very traditional stories in a classic sense, because I don't normally do. I'm kind of noted for being humorous, even in horror. Even the Happen Leonard series are humorous.
Yeah.
And so I got tired of them. But then when Casey came up with this, and her humor and mine are very similar, our styles are very similar, and we started writing those, then it really invigorated. And now they've got comic interest, TV interest, and we're hoping some of that will materialize.
Right. Very nice. Yeah. Very nice. So now, so you were growing up reading and stuff. Did you like horror, too, at the time?
The thing that I was really obsessed with, and this is pre-Twilight, but were vampires. And the movie that scared the bejesus out of me, oh, my God. Nosferatu is maybe the scariest thing I've ever seen.
I've never even heard of that.
Really?
It is. They're actually, I think, remaking it. But the silent black and white is the scariest thing I've ever seen. And I was always obsessed with vampires. And
I had a weird obsession with vampires at one point, too.
I always loved those. And he would watch, you know, they would put me to bed. Mom would go to bed. Dad would be up in the TV room. And I'd crawl up there, you know, stick my head around. And he'd let me come in and watch. And always, you know, it was Universal monster movies and Frankenstein's monster, everything.
They remade Nosferatu and they're remaking it again.
Yeah. I know.
I've never even heard of it.
Nosferatu is the original kind of Dracula.
Okay.
Right. But it's not exactly following.
Oh, wait. Who was in the remake?
Oh, I don't remember.
I just read about it because...
He had long hair, right?
German actor. Quite well. What was... Klaus...
It was kind of like a love story, too,
Natasha,
right?
Natasha Kinski.
All right, how do you spell it?
Kinski.
I don't know who's the new one.
It's
with Nosferatu?
Yeah.
Nosferatu, I think.
Yeah. So it just came up because the other day they actually listed the 10 most popular vampire movies
in
USA Today. And it was on it,
it's a silent version.
Scary about it was that actor, bless him, but there was no special effects. This guy was just a creepy dude.
1922.
Yeah,
and he's really, really, really creepy.
Yeah.
And I don't see the remake on here.
There was one, but it was Klaus von Kinski, you know, I think.
Well, we
it's weird. It's not even on IMDb. I mean, on Google. It's only the 1922 one is on here.
Oh, it should be.
Yeah.
Well, that's a scary movie, and it's not very long. And but the scenes and are all silent, and you think, oh well, I can do this, and it's pretty intense.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So you like old movies too?
I do. I mean, that's what I grew up watching. So there's a nostalgia there. There's also an enjoyment there. Yeah. And, you know, and it's funny because there's a lot of things. Like, Ghostbreaker was a Bob Hope movie. And I just rewatched that not long ago for Halloween. And as I watched it, I thought, holy shit, you could never, like, all of this stuff is not PC. It's so, you know, it's so offensive, but also it's such a good story.
I've never
and
heard
it's fun.
Of any of these.
Well, and you watch it, and it could never be made now. And that's sort of...
Yeah.
not to be nostalgic about the offensive and non-PC stuff, but there is something to be said for being able to say what's really going on in culture and what's really going on
well,
with people
right.
around you.
There's PC and then there's insanely PC.
Right.
You know, because sometimes you have to say offensive things to make the point.
Right. Right.
And
but
sometimes,
that doesn't mean you're
right, doesn't mean you
offensive.
Are. But I wrote some fiction that took place in the 30s and the 50s and now even. And, I mean, I live in East Texas. I've heard some things.
Yeah,
so when
I can imagine.
When I write this fiction, and East Texas is a wonderful people, but there's these areas that, you know, I've heard here.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is that if you want to make that point in fiction, it could be, oh, I can't say this word.
Yeah.
If I'm trying to use it to its context, it's like Huckleberry Finn's one of the greatest anti-racist novels ever written. And
right.
it uses some things that are offensive to people. Well, you know, they don't want their feelings hurt. Fuck them.
Right.
You know, because what you're trying to do is make a more important statement about racism. Which
right.
is, that's one of my things is that I've written about. Bill Paxton and I were making, bless him. We're making a film out of one of my books, The Bottoms, which is about 1930s racism in the South. And he died, of course, and we never got it made. But that book is the most important thing I've ever written because that is its entire thematic purpose.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it isn't entertaining. There's crime elements. It's got all kinds of things. But these are things I wanted to put out there. The idea that we PC thing everything and gloss it over like it never happened is the worst choice
it's
ever.
It's the worst.
It's
right?
like yeah, it's like taking the Holocaust and saying, oh, it never happened.
Right.
That's the
and
worst thing that yeah. that you can do.
And everyone is so yeah. sensitive now, like you can't even say anything without it being like a big
yeah,
deal.
Yeah,
right.
Some of it we've got to fight back against it.
Right.
But the problem is that some of it I think is righteous. They're trying to get to a righteous point, but it's become well. You know, he said that word, and that word may not even be in that context.
Exactly.
You know, I've had people say, "Oh, I read the Lansdale story, and it was racist because I saw the N word." And I thought, the character that said it is racist,
right.
not the story.
Right.
The story's
right.
got another point.
Right.
Exactly. And
I
you're supposed to tell the story.
Right.
You know, you're
right.
not supposed to be politically correct, like
right.
to edit what the guy would have thought or
right.
said.
Right. And that
know?
Way, everybody in the book would be just the same. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And they would all have your opinions.
Exactly.
You know?
They'd all be
and then no
PC,
one would read
you know?
It.
Nobody would
no
read
one
it.
No one would read it. But if you think about it, the people that are still reading books are like people like Sam, me, and there's people that all have that mentality are not reading books because they're not finding any enjoyment out of it because they want the whole book to be their opinion.
Well, yeah, and they also want to look at the past and say, my God, they used that in the past. Well, that doesn't mean that I say, oh, that's nice. But when Huckleberry Finn came out and when Mark Twain used it, that was a common vernacular, but it was also, he did it for the point,
right.
the shock effect. Right. The greatest thing in that book is when Huck Finn, he realizes that Jim is a slave, obviously, they're friends, and that he should go back because that's what the Christians taught him. That was the Christian thing to do, was to send, you know, Jim back to his masters. And Huck says, you know what, I know it's the right thing to do, but I'm just going to go to hell. Because
yeah.
that's what's supposed to happen if he didn't turn. I'm not turning Jim in.
Really?
Yeah. And that whole point in that, when
I've never
read
that book.
Neither have I.
It's fantastic. I've read it three or four
Me
times.
Me and Sam are like, great.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
No, it's
novel.
One of the ones you got to read. But
I think they made a movie, yeah. right?
They made a bunch of bad movies.
Yeah. Because I definitely heard that name before.
To Kill a Mockingbird, it deals with the same thing. You know, one of the greatest films. It's my favorite film.
Uh-huh.
But there are people abandoning it because it makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's discussing racism and saying this is not good.
They kind of did a remake with that with Matthew McConaughey, right? But they didn't put
no.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
No, it was that was Time to Kill.
Oh, okay.
But that's
yeah.
no.
That's right. A great movie.
A Pelican Brief, no? Or
that's
was
a different
it?
One.
Oh,
Time
no,
to
no,
Kill
Time
was
to kill,
actually
right.
the,
Sandra Bullock's in that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a good movie, but it ain't To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah. I don't think they ever remade it then, right? It's just the old school.
She's
I
got the weirdest association.
Never remake it. It's absolutely perfect. It's Gregory Peck.
But I feel like all they're doing now in Hollywood is remakes because no one is creating anything anymore. Everything is
like
a remake.
Are creating it, but those networks are so afraid to not have a built-in audience already that they're not taking the risks of putting something new out. It's easier to do a
I'm
sequel
or a remake.
I'm
dying for something new.
Well, TV is doing some pretty revolutionary
things. And that's why TV
things.
Is king right now.
Yeah, it really is.
But what'll happen is that is some of the more revolutionary things, some of them don't do well, then they'll start looking for a format. And what'll happen is you'll have the same sort of format with what was once revolutionary.
Right.
And then somebody else will have to break out of it again. The Happ and Leonard series, that based on my books, was done on Sundance TV, and it really got a lot of attention, especially for how it dealt with racial issues and things like that. But it was their most popular show, and they canceled after three seasons because it was on this small channel. They have new people coming in to, you know, run the business. Right. It was like 100% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. It had a fanatic fan base, and they tried to get it renewed, and they didn't. But I think it does show that there are, and maybe it was a little controversial, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think it shows that there's a place for that. There really is, and that there are more people that are willing to do this than just have, you know, the standard stuff.
Right, right. Well, let's focus a little bit on the current book. Tell us a little bit about this. So this is a collaboration of both of you, right?
Right.
And how did the idea come about for the book? The book is called Terror is Our Business, Dana Roberts' Case Book of Horrors. How did this come about?
Well, you know, he had the original character, Dana, and then, of course, I told you the story how the other character kind of presented herself. But then we had these stories written. We'd done another one for Subterranean Press, and we just thought, well, let's put these together. And we wrote a new one, Case of the Ragman's Anguish, and we did it in sort of that old style where everything is case of the, just to kind of keep the theme. But basically, we just wanted to put all these stories that kind of matched in one collection, and here you go.
We
so
were
these
surprised.
Are a bunch of different stories.
Yeah.
Right, but they're all the same character, lead characters. They're ladies that are dealing with this supernormal, is what Dana calls it, because she doesn't believe it's supernatural. She believes it's things that are yet to be explained.
I agree with that.
But she uses a lot of what would be thought of as supernatural devices to help protect her and Jana and to solve these crimes. And they're very different. Dana's a very stiff sort of person, very proper, and Jan is the sort of person that, you know, wears her pajamas to the store and that kind of thing, you know.
Right.
So they're very, very different characters, and that makes for an interesting conflict. But yet they're very, you know, very entertaining. There's a lot of humor, especially in the ones we do with both the characters.
Right.
That we work.
Now, are they detectives here?
You would call them supernatural detectives, supernormal, like the old Night Stalker series or things like that.
X-Files, things like that.
Yeah, things like that.
Things that happen that you can't explain.
Yeah, and Dana seems to have a little, let's say, training, if you will. I mean,
she
it's her
knows
expertise.
It. That's her expertise.
And Jana's just kind of along for the ride and like, oh, that's some weird shit. All right, what's next? You know, so their dynamic of her being really proper and having information and background, and then the other girl who's just like, hey, let's see what happens.
Right.
You know, it's kind of a fun dynamic.
And you mentioned the X-Files. My son and I just wrote two issues of the X-Files comics.
Very nice.
But it really,
they
complement each other without knowing they're going to.
Yeah.
A little bit, they're kind of butt heads a little bit, you know, but they find that they really give each other something that the other doesn't have.
How long did this take?
Well, I'd written the four stories with my original character, Dana, over several years. I just write one every now and then. And then Casey and I don't know.
I think Blind Love would have been 2013.
Yeah.
And then
it came fast.
And then
though.
Bleeding
we wrote
Walls
it quickly.
Was probably 2015-ish.
Uh-huh.
And then this last one, you know.
Then we realized we could put them together. And, the response has just been terrific.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's cool. So this is a collection of stories, adventures, right?
Right.
And where does this take place? Where does she live?
Different places.
Oh, they go different places.
We never define where she lives.
Right.
And some of them don't define where they're taking place, but some are like in Italy. That is definitely there. There's one in East Texas. I think, where was Blind Love? Did you have a...
Blind Love was in East Texas because it was just the one character with her friend.
Right, right, right. So it's that. And the others, they're not necessarily defined. When I was writing those four, they weren't as defined.
Right. So those are stories that each one of you wrote. Did you collaborate on any specific story?
Oh, we collaborated. I wrote the four by myself, but all the rest are written together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How does that happen? How do you write together? Do you like write a few pages, give it to him?
And then he adds more to it.
Like that first time, you know, I just sent him those five pages on email and I just waited. And
right.
So he proofed through what I had, added five pages.
Right.
Sends it back. I proof through what he does, you know, send
so
it back.
So we both actually go over it several times.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So you don't know how the story is going to develop.
Correct, which is good and bad.
Yeah.
I
know.
That's one reason I don't like to collaborate, because I don't plot. I don't know. I just sit down and start writing.
Really?
Right. But when you
so
do
you
it,
don't know the ending or where it's going to go.
Very rarely. Once in a while, I'll have some idea. But when you collaborate, that can be a mess because everybody can ride their horse off in a different direction. Yeah. So you have to kind of do it, but we don't do any kind of detailed outline.
Wow, very nice. I mean, how exciting. You know, I would love to do something with my daughter like this, but she's so off to doing something else, you know. But it's cool. So... So how long have you guys been doing this together now?
Well, you know, it's funny because I was off doing the music and still do the music a lot. You know, I think of myself as a musician. I always, what do you do? Okay. I'm a musician. And then it's like, so what's your latest project? I'm like, well, my book just came out. So it's sort of, there's an adjustment that I'm having to make when it's hard to box yourself in. We're like, what do you do? Well, I don't have one answer. I do a lot of things, but I think, you know, I circled off and have been doing music full time ever since I was a teenager.
Wow.
So I think that for me, it was fun to kind of circle back and then get to do that with my dad.
But,
you know, we did things together really early on in a different way. Right. It's like when we go to Italy, I would sometimes do readings and then they would take a break and have her sing. They have a
really?
Different gap. Yeah. And they were like really well attended.
Because a lot of times, like we've done German tours, Italian, and a lot of places in Europe, they just consider all that the arts, you know?
Right.
And so they looked at us as a twofer. Oh, we can have an author, we can have a musician. And now it's kind of me diving into that world. But when I first started writing was when I was 8, and we did a project, him and my brother. Wow. So I didn't realize, and not that I have to, but just for lack of better words, let's say I didn't realize I had to define what I was doing. I just thought like, oh, this is fun, let me do this now. Or, oh, this is fun, let me do this now. Right. And that's been a blessing and a curse because, you know, the momentum can go where it will. But also, you just kind of do what makes you feel good and happy in that moment and hope for the best.
Yeah, that's true.
It's another creative outlet that our dogs don't do.
Nicky's in there just writing
stories. My dog's probably at home.
He's got a recording studio.
But, you know, while you're here in the last few minutes, we might as well plug your music as well. Let's play a little bit of your song. Do you want to?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank
First, before you do that, I just want to say how cool it is that you traveled with your dad.
Yeah. Right.
So like Italy. God, I'm gonna text my dad now. Like, you suck.
You know, and I want to give her producer a shout out too. Is John Carter Cash? It's Johnny's son, and he's a marvelous guy. And all the people who work for him do a real good job because she records with him at the Cash Cabin out of Hendersonville.
Yeah, he's really brought the music up to another level, so I'm really proud of it. Thank you.
Nice. And when was this song released?
So this is Sorry Ain't Enough off of the first album. I've since released an EP called Living in the Moment. I like them both. They're very different.
Uh-huh.
This came out, it would have been, let's see, 14, I think? January of 2014?
Yeah, that's what it says. September 30th is when you posted it, I think.
Yeah, so this, I think January of 2014 was when this...
So it's been around for a while.
Right. Last one came out last August, so the new one should be out next spring or fall.
Okay, so you're still recording and everything. Very
but this
nice.
I have a sentimental favorite to this one, so...
Okay, let's hear Casey Lansdale, Sorry Ain't Enough. We'll just hear a little bit of it.
Cat drug in. I heard you might have lost your new girlfriend. Then knock, knock, knock. Guess who's at my door? Now you're talking like you've lost your mind. Standing here handing me the same old lines. How you wanna go back to what we had before? Say there's nothing that you won't do to prove your love. Well, why don't you?
That's awesome.
Wow, you're super good.
Thank you.
You are. Yeah. Did you write the song?
Yes.
Anytime someone brings music in, I kind of hold my breath for the first 30 seconds. I'm like, God.
Are we going to like this?
Thank you.
Is this our style? I know.
It's a nice video. Yeah, there's a video was on Great American Country.
We did CMT, GAC.
I mean, you definitely sound like you got it. Like, you should be famous right now. Like, for sure. Like, boom.
Well, with all the things you're doing, I'm sure you're going to...
Is Nashville the show still on?
It is still on.
Why don't you get a little...
Girl, that is a question.
Yeah, I used to be obsessed with that show. Obsessed with it. And then they moved it to the Country Network, and I just stopped watching it, actually. Yeah.
So you lived in Nashville for a while you were recording this?
Yes.
How long were you living there?
I was there off and on for about 6 years.
Somebody really? Broke your heart.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. and probably more than one. Like, yeah. How much time do we got?
Yeah, right.
It's all right. Makes for good material, right? You know, ask Adele.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Country singers, they always have some complicated situations in their songs. Right. Always breaking hearts.
Yeah. Well, everyone always gets so confused because I listen to country like all the time and no one ever believes me.
Yeah.
I'm like, nope, I do.
It depends, you know, it depends. Some music I like. I mean, some songs I like.
That's
some
the way I am.
Don't.
I'm like all kinds of things.
Yeah,
exactly.
Same. Like,
you know?
Hip-hop, and my playlist is so weird. I'll go from like hip-hop, like the most ratchet song in America, to the most saddest country song ever. That's just how I am.
So the book is Terror is Our Business, Dana Roberts' Case Book of Horrors. And so this is a paperback. And available everywhere, I can see, on Amazon and everything.
Yeah, tonight we're actually doing a signing in San Diego at Mysterious Galaxies. And we're going to be doing, we've got a signing Monday at the Last Bookstore, downtown LA. Tuesday at Dark Delicacies in Burbank. And Wednesday, Romans in Pasadena. So if anybody wants to come in and get a signed copy.
Those are like famous places.
Yeah, yeah, I'm really excited. Nice.
And we got a Texas tour in August.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
But if you can't make it out there, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, anywhere that, you know, anywhere books are sold.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Excellent books.
That's right. There you go.
Amazing, amazing. So these are all scary stories, you would say, right?
Yeah.
Some characters, some scary characters.
There's humor. They're kind of creepy.
Dark
I think
humor.
That's what I would call them.
Yeah.
Creepy.
I love me a good creepy book.
Did you read Goosebumps when you were growing up?
Oh, absolutely.
Sam, that's so weird. I was literally just about to ask that.
Really?
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth.
In my introduction, I mentioned that I read them.
Yeah.
Well, she actually mentioned it at the first of the show.
Yeah.
R.L. Stein.
Yeah.
That's the guy that wrote the Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Which I met him last year for the first time, and I was like,
starstruck.
Yeah, I was like, hello, Mr. Stein, will you sign my book?
I grew up reading those too. They were great. They were scary though. And then show on Nickelodeon.
Oh my god, 100%. Yes.
I was like, forget it. Why don't you guys try to sell this and get your own little like short story, like half hour?
We have some TV.
Because they don't have those anymore.
We have some TV interest in it, and we have some comic book interest in it. And we're hoping all those will materialize.
Right, because they don't make like Goosebumps used to have like the half hour, and in that half hour you'd be like just so messed up as a kid. You're like, I'm not going to bed.
Well, they don't make you dark.
The one with
kids,
the ventriloquist, do you remember that?
Oh,
the ventriloquist dummy?
Yeah, and do you remember the one where the girlfriend died in a car accident? It's like the only one I remember.
Oh my God.
But she kept popping up, like she showed up to the school dance.
Oh gosh.
I mean, you know what? They all conflate.
Yeah.
I read every one of them.
Yeah, my son too. He loved those.
Yeah. See, they don't make any, like Black Mirror and stuff isn't really like that. Plus, those are an hour long. I want like a half hour short, good story.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You know, I don't see that many scary movies and maybe some books, but I just finished The Outsider by Stephen King, the new one.
Yeah.
And there's some interesting stuff. So I like that the mix of the normal and the supernatural and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pick up your book and check it out. Everybody check out Terror is Our Business. And you can find this anywhere. Guys, where can people find you, contact you if they want to?
I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on, you know, basically any social media, CaseyLansdale.com. And, you know, I'd love to hear from everybody and come out to the signings.
Yeah, I have a fan page, and I have the Twitter page, and I have a regular...
Just website, yeah.
Website, yeah.
I don't run it, so I don't, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, today nobody cares about websites. Like, you know,
right.
10 years ago, it was if you don't have a website, you don't exist.
Yeah, now it's like you got to have the Instagram, and you don't exist.
The social media, you know? Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You're
a lot of fun. We wish you a lot of success. You guys are very talented, very ambitious, you know, and we really appreciate knowing you, you know.
Thank you.
And we'd like to see more of your work. So you said you have some things coming up, like possible TV and
movies. Well, possibly in this. I also have a bunch of films that it looks like they're you know, we're in the mix. We got, right. I get paid, so I get to cash the checks.
Yeah, right. There you go.
So that part we're at. So yeah. we'll see what happens from there. And I have a new book in my series coming out called The Elephant of Surprise.
Ah.
Comes out early next year.
Very cool.
Well, you have to come back and tell everybody about that book.
Well, Joe and Casey Lansdale, thank you so much for joining us. All the best
thank
to you. Everybody catch their book signings if you can. You can find them on the website. And Danny, have a great weekend.
You too.
See you all on Monday.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Danny, only on LA Talk Radio.